In all that you just heard, that story about that man, I want you to think about this one line that you just heard. When Jesus saw him lying there and knew that he had been there a long time, he said to him, "Do you want to be made well?" If you read that lesson carefully, you'll note something a little strange about the encounter between Jesus and the man at the pool of Bethesda. We might say, to make this story a little more familiar to us, the encounter between Jesus and the man in the hospital. The man in the hospital for the chronically ill. Whenever a writer of the Gospels bothers to provide us with specific details in a story about the ministry of Jesus, we know we're supposed to pay close attention. And in a very short amount of time, we are told a lot of specifics about this place. It's by one of the gates of Jerusalem, the Sheep Gate. And by that gate, there is a pool. By the pool, there are some porticos, specifically five porticos. And to those porticos, people with disabilities and illnesses come to touch the waters of the pool. The pool is probably a naturally occurring spring, because we know that from time to time it riles up like water is coming up from beneath the earth to make it stirred up. And we're meant to understand that the healing powers of the waters in the pool, everybody thinks they're more powerful when that pool is riled up. All that information is packed into those few brief lines that Beth just read. And from this, we can make a pretty simple conclusion. The people for whom this story was first written probably did not know a lot about Jerusalem, because they needed all this described to them to understand what was happening in the story. For them, Jerusalem was not only the city of the great temple and the capital of the Roman authority, it was a place of God's powerful presence, a place where the spiritual and physical worlds existed in very close proximity to each other. And here's another detail worth our attention. The man whom Jesus is addressing has been ill for a very long time. Not just for a while, not just for a long time, 38 years. Father, you don't even look 38 years old. 38 years. Now, being ill for 38 years would be a long time for any of us, to say nothing of someone living in the ancient world. The tour guides in the Holy Land will tell you that the average life expectancy of somebody in Jesus' day was about 35 years. Now, that's not quite right, because it really depended on who you were in society. If you were a wealthy Roman citizen, chances are you were going to have a pretty long life, as long as you survived childbirth. But if you were a person of the Jewish community, especially if you had been sick for a long time, your chances were not that good. So at least what we know about this man is that he has been poor and suffering for most of his life. So, for a Jewish man in Jerusalem to be ill for nearly 40 years, that meant a bad outcome. And for all that time, for all those years, he just wanted to find a way to get into the healing water when it got stirred up. And for 38 years, he's never once gotten a turn. Everyone else pushes in ahead of him. He can't get in. What's interesting about that is that it's been so long that this man has tried to get to the water that he has actually forgotten what his problem is. That's what becomes clear in this exchange with Jesus. For 38 years, he's been trying to get into the water and failing every time. And what has happened to him over all that time is that the problem of getting into the water has become his most important issue. If he could only get to the water, he could get food for himself. If he could only get to the water, he could get a job. If he could only get to the water, people would treat him better and respect him as a part of the community. There's this thing he's completely focused on, and it is all that he can see in front of him. It's the water that he can't get to. That is what he thinks his most important problem is. He's forgotten that his problem isn't that he can't get to the water. His problem is that he can't walk. His problem is that he isn't well. Jesus comes into this picture and asks him a very simple question, or at least it seems like a simple question. Do you want to be made well? What's wrapped up in that simple question is a deep well of understanding. Jesus sees the man. He sees his age. He sees his condition. He sees what's separating him from the life that he wants to have. And the question Jesus asks him contains and transcends all of that and gets right to the heart of the problem. Do you want to be made well? But that is not the question the man answers. The question the man answers is the question he is focused on, which is why he hasn't been healed yet. He's focused on a solution that hasn't worked for 38 years. He doesn't answer the question Jesus asks him because he's asking the wrong question of himself. This seems to me a little bit like the relationship Jesus has with the church. Jesus comes into our midst, into our story, sees the whole of our situation, of our context, of our history, of our worries, and we are ready with answers. Our answers are things like, people don't join organizations anymore. Our children all have screens in front of them all the time. We are all too busy and the world demands too much of us. Our church, our Episcopal church, is sort of a mystery to the people around us in this neighborhood. And our convocation of churches is sort of a mystery to the Episcopal church itself. Being a church is hard. Those are the answers we have. I've only been in the convocation for 2 months, and I've heard those answers again and again wherever I go. But you know, I'm pretty sure that none of them are answers to the question Jesus is asking us. Jesus isn't asking us why more people don't come to our church. Jesus isn't asking us why our children are having a hard time engaging with us, or how the people outside here look on us. Jesus isn't asking us about how the particular laws of Germany pertaining to churches make it hard for us to do what we do. Those are the answers ready to leap to our lips. But they're not the question Jesus is asking us. The question Jesus is asking us is, do you want to be a disciple? Do you want to be a disciple? Do you want to try to live as though you really trusted God? Do you want to walk in the way of love? Not when it means unconditional love is here for you, but when it means you have to show love to others even when you don't feel very loving. Do you want to be a disciple? Do you want to share what you have found here with other people? Not because you know that you're right and they're wrong, but because in this place with these people, you have found a truth about the power of God's transforming love to overcome even our certainties. Do you want to be a disciple? We are so ready to answer that question with some other answer. But that's the question we're being asked. you and me and the convocation and the Episcopal Church and the entire Christian community. Say it differently, and we're being asked, what is most important to us? The things that we've been trying to do over and over and over that sometimes don't work that well, or responding to the call of disciples to trust radically in God's love, God's message, and God's mission. This past March, for the very first time, I attended a meeting of the House of Bishops, the gathering of all the bishops in the Episcopal Church from Taiwan to Europe and everywhere in between. One of the speakers that Bishop Curry invited to address this room filled with Episcopal bishops was a woman named Vashti McKenzie. She is a bishop of the African Methodist Episcopal Church back in the United States. She is the first woman ever elected to that ministry in her church. Bishop McKenzie stood in front of a room filled with Episcopal bishops. And this is what she said. You know, most of us aren't preaching Christianity on Sunday morning. We're so worried about the church that what we end up preaching is churchianity. The idea that somehow the church is the message and not the gospel. She said this in front of a room filled with bishops. You know, bishops are the kind of people who kind of made their whole life about the church. It made people kind of uncomfortable. But I have a feeling that she is more right than not. And I'm coming to believe that if we actually listened deeply, prayerfully, to the question Jesus is asking us, we might find ourselves resurrected too. That may be why we hesitate to risk answering the question. We want some idea of just how much it is we think is going to have to change. We love our faith, but we also love the traditions that brought us to our faith. And those are the things we don't want to lose. But there's still this question before us, the one for which we need to have an answer that comes as quickly for us as all the other answers that we have. Do we want to be disciples? Do we want to take up our cross and follow, knowing that the only things that get resurrected are things that have died? Are we willing to risk trusting that God has already figured out how to get us to the waters of the pool? I hope so. I pray so. I hope that you pray so. Amen.